You know, in one of his return trips to Capitol Hill, Secretary of State Marco Rubio testified on the Cuba crisis and what's happening there. And he was asked if there would be regime change in Cuba. And he said, well, we're not going to force the issue of regime change, but we do want a regime change in Cuba, much like what we saw in Venezuela, much like what we're seeing in Iran. While they may not be openly calling for a regime change, that is part of the underlying issue here. Is you've got these folks that are adversarial to the United States. They don't like us, and so that's something that they want to change.
And the DOJ is going after Raul Castro. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Cuba finds themselves in a situation because of what is happening around the world. They're out of oil.
Yeah.
And that is part of the impetus on now what the United States is seeing as an opportunity to potentially apply pressure to Cuba. There could be military action at this point as well. And the daily life for people in Cuba at this point is a tough one. But Cuba warning now that U.S. military action would cause a bloodbath at this point. The president there said Cuba does not represent a threat, but they will defend themselves if the United States takes action against the island nation. Let's talk about it. Professor Silvia Pedrez is the international sociology professor at the University of Michigan and joins us this morning. Professor, it's great to have you.
Thank you. The last name is Pedraza.
Pedraza, excuse me. Appreciate that.
Right. No, that's fine.
Let's talk about the situation now. First of all, what state is Cuba in with the significant oil shortage at this point?
Well, my understanding is that at this point, you know, there has been a remarkable crisis because of the lack of gasoline, petroleum. And then Russia sent a vessel with a lot of gasoline, but that has also finished. So, in fact, they have nothing right now. That's my understanding.
And we're talking about, I understand, Professor, blackouts there lasting up to 20 hours a day. I mean, what happens to families and schools and hospitals and communities when electricity becomes that unreliable and unavailable?
Yeah, no, and also the loss of electricity also means that, you know, people in Cuba have very difficult access to food, and when they finally find some, they put it in a freezer, and, you know, the food in the freezer spoils when there is no electricity. So it's not just about lack of electricity, it's also about lack of food. Lack of transportation.
Sure,
last time I was in Cuba, Christmas before this extremely severe crisis of electricity, but already there were, you know, huge manifestations of what was going to happen, and you can't get around. You know, there are no taxis. It's just impossible to find reliable ground transportation.
I was reading a story in The Hill, and one of the things that I found to be pretty interesting is Cuba has amassed about 300 military drones. They say they would use them if the United States took military action against them. There was one U.S. official that spoke on a condition of anonymity that said that this buildup of these military drones is a growing threat. How do these things materialize between the relationship between the United States and Cuba at this point?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the Cuban heads of the military said recently, we always knew that they would come, meaning the United States, you know. So they really do think that the United States is going to invade. They have thought for a long, long time, and it has been a justification for militarizing the society as much as it is militarized. Sometime back, I read a book on the Cuban military by a Canadian professor who said that per capita military, Cuba has a larger military than Canada, you know, which is amazing. So, you know, they're very militarized. And, you know, one of the unfortunate consequences of the embargo is that it has justified a lot of things, you know, and one of the things it has justified is the militarization of Cuban society.
Professor, historically, you know, when Cuba faces severe economic strain, migration increases. Mm-hmm. Are we likely to see another wave of Cubans leaving the island?
Well, migration has increased dramatically in the last couple of years. For fiscal year 23 and 24, together, it's 500,000 people who left the island for the United States. We don't even know how many people have left the island for other countries of Latin America. And since that time, also since this last, you know, two waves that were so the largest ever out of Cuban society, President Trump has made it more difficult for Cubans and everybody else, but also for Cubans to enter the United States without proper papers. So I think that the push for people to leave is there, mm-hmm. but I think that at the present, they're going to have to go somewhere other than the United States because they will not be received in this country.
Professor Sylvia Pedraza, thank you so much for your time this morning, your insight. It's something that we're certainly watching, and we'll talk again very soon.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, you got it.
I mean, it's a situation. I mean, 20 hours, 20 plus hours, no electricity, mm-hmm. a day. I mean, how can a society live? I mean, you know, not only you got schools and transportation and just families, you know, but you also have people, I'm sure, who have medical conditions who need maybe be hooked up to different machines and there's no electricity. What happens to them? You got people that are probably perishing over there as well.
Yeah, certainly. Meanwhile, interesting, plans for a data center in Washington Township have been withdrawn. This comes from a San Francisco-based real estate company that had put plans in for a 320-acre campus south of 32 Mile Road in Washington Township last year. The application's been withdrawn, but that doesn't mean that they're going to not resubmit
right.
at some point. But it is an example that maybe some of the outrage over these data centers is making a dent.
Yes, and these communities, man, this local pushback is starting to really, you know, take shape and slow these expansions here.
Yeah. Meanwhile, in Lansing, there is a new legislation that's been introduced. It's an anti-fraud bounty plan to help investigate corruption here in the state of Michigan. We'll talk about that on the other side. It's JR Morning.